Hello and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. It's been a busy week, especially in terms of comics. I mean, it's been a busy week at work too. But I decided when I got back from my vacation, my Christmas vacation, that I was going to treat myself to gifts. And I placed a mycomicshop.com order. And I placed a TKO Presents order, and I placed an order to Aaron Myers. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about a couple of them, and the next episode, I'll do mycomicshop.com because that was quite an order. So, the first thing I want to talk about is the TKO. So, the TKO Publishing, offers on their website, they offer the first issues for free to read in PDF format. So when I heard that, I wanted to check them out. I mean, there's some big names involved, and I wanted to check them out, see how things were. And I went out there and I think I read Seven Deadly Sins first, and that's a Western. And I read, I think it was, Good Night. What was this one called? Let me, Good Night Paradise by Joshua Dysart. And then I read Sarah. And finally, I read The Fearsome Dr. Fang. The one thing I was surprised at is the way I enjoyed them. Is I liked the Seven Deadly Sins the best, and I don't know if it's because I was really hungry for a Western or what. And then I liked The Fearsome Dr. Fang. Both of those were by Z T Z E Z, I guess you'd say it, Z Shun. I don't know how to pronounce it, but I thought these were really good. And I heard he does like a he's a TV writer, and I really enjoyed them. And then I also really enjoyed the other two. So when I got back, I didn't want to have to worry about shipping during the holidays. So I decided to place the order, and I did. And I was really impressed. I got an email back immediately saying, "Okay, we placed your order, and we'll notify you when we ship it." And it was like, I don't know, 3 4 days after that they and I don't know if I got free shipping because I ordered all four, but the shipping was free. And I guess they sent it over standard mail, so it was, but it turned out to be good. The box was sealed. There was like a wrapper around the trades, and then each individual trade was wrapped. So they're about the size of some of the books that Image has been putting out. I can't think of the the one about the border Image book. I can't think of what it is, but it's a Brian K. Vaughan story. And then it's about the same size as the terrible Elizabeth Dunn Against the Devils in Suits by Image Comics. So they're in that realm. And the art's spectacular. I think the presentation is nice. And the reason I went with the trades is 'cause of size. So the comics are about that size too. And the trade, it's a little more easy to put it on a shelf than to get the it comes in a protective box, and then you get the six issues. And I heard the boxes were kind of flimsy, but I wouldn't want to use the box anyway, to tell you the truth. I'd probably bag and board them and then throw them into a box if they fit. And they do fit in the drawer box. I don't know about other boxes, but they fit and slide out. I don't know if how effective they'll be, like if you pull it out at an angle or something, you might bend it. I don't know. I'd have to experiment. But anyway, I got the TKO Publishing. I also got two Kickstarters in the mail. this week. So man, I got a shit ton of comics. The Kickstarters were La Voz de Mayo Tata Rambo. I don't even know what it is, but that name, it sold me on the Kickstarter, and I think it's about a grandfather, and call him Tata. That's what I call my grandfather when he was alive, Tata. And I think he was a Vietnam vet, and it's a story of that. And then I got All We Ever Wanted, and this book is like an anthology, it looks like, and it looks really nice. I look forward to checking that out. So, I was happy to see me some Kickstarters finally start to trickle in. And last but not least, I placed an order with Aaron Myers, and it was kind of a strange order. I was kind of just randomly going through his Facebook page and seeing what I want, and I've ordered from him in the past. You might be surprised on a couple of these. I got Power Pack number one. I haven't read much Power Pack. I think I read one Power Pack back in the day when we went on vacation. I remember picking up at one of those Stuckies a Power Pack and a King Conan. And I read that Power Pack maybe like five times, and it was like a Power Pack in the middle of a story arc, and I enjoyed it much. The only reason I picked it up is because it was something that I didn't already get, and I was curious. I didn't originally pick it up because I was like, I don't want to read a comic book. This is, I don't know. I didn't want to read a comic book about a bunch of children. I just didn't want to. And now things have changed. I'll read any comic, but back then I was a little more picky and more into continuity and stuff. And then I picked up X-Men 62, which has Kazar on the cover. I picked up Uncanny X-Men 114, which has The Day the X-Men Died. I like the cover. It's pretty good. I don't have a lot of X-Men, so it's easy to pick up X-Men. I've never been fond of them until like the last, I don't know, 15 years or so. That's when I started buying it regularly. I also bought Secret Six number one. This is the Silver Age Secret Six. So I look forward to digging into that. When I was a kid, my parents bought me a subscription to Crazy Magazine. And this isn't the magazine, but Crazy had a comic. It had three issues of Crazy, and this is the first issue. So I picked that up. And then this is going to surprise you, but I didn't ever have V for Vendetta, so I picked up the entire run of V for Vendetta. You might say, why didn't you get that? Because back in that when that tape came out, there's another Alan Moore book that I didn't buy the singles, and that was Watchmen. And I still don't own Watchmen. I own not Watch. I've read Watchmen, and I own Watchmen in absolute format. I was hesitant to buy books back then, even though I was a lot into DC and all in. If it was out of continuity back then, I had a lot of weird things, and I told you one of them was continuity. If it was outside, I didn't necessarily get it. And then the other thing was if it was, it was outside continuity, if it was an Elseworlds. So now you'll see me picking up a lot of Elseworlds because I do want to have every single DC comic since 1973. It's a goal. I don't know if I'll get there, but I'm getting pretty damn close, at least on like a lot of the DC proper stuff. I still would have to go after some Wildstorm, even though I own most of it, and Vertigo. I have a lot of Vertigo, but I don't have a lot of the singles. And some of the other stuff I got was I got a magazine called Marvel Super Action featuring the Punisher. It's only a one issue comic. This is the only issue that came out of that title. I got a few Marvel graphic novels and I was really impressed. So he had a bundle, and I would say this gets me real close to having a complete run. I still have to get the New Mutants, a graphic novel, which is their first appearance. These are like magazine-sized graphic novel, thick cover stock books. I didn't order these. They have numbers except for the last one. But I'm just gonna read them off. I have, and not in any particular order. I got Star Slammers number 6 is that graphic novel by Walter Simonson. I got Super Boxers, which is issue number 8 by Ron Wilson, John Byrne, and Armando Gill. I got Void Indigo by Steve Gerber and Val Mayerik. That should be a good one, because I personally love Steve Gerber. I got the Raven Banner graphic novel number 15 by Alan Zelenets and Charles Vess. This is a popular one. The two most popular ones, there's three popular ones that I know of, and one I already own is The Death of Captain Marvel. The next one that's probably most popular is X-Men God Loves, Man Kills. So that's by Chris Claremont and Brent Eric Anderson. And it is sort of the plot for X-Men 2, that movie. We then have The Last of the Dragons by Potts, Dennis O'Neill, Austin, and Marie Severin. We then have a Kill Raven. That's issue 7 by Don McGregor and P.K. Craig Russell. We then have The Incredible Hulk and The Thing by Jim Starlin and Bernie Wrightson. That one doesn't have an issue on the cover. The issue numbers are not always there. This one also doesn't have one. This one I already own, but it was part of the bundle, so easy for me to get it. It's Miranda the She-Wolf by Chris Claremont and John Bolton. We then have Punisher, Assassin's Guild. This one also doesn't have a number, but it's by Joe Duffy and Jorge Zaffino. We then have Heartburst. This is issue 10 of Marvel Graphic Novel by Rick Veitch. We have The Futurians, graphic novel by David Cockrum. Excalibur, Weird War 3. This one doesn't have the creators on the cover, but I bet you it's Chris Claremont and somebody else. We have number 12, which is Dazzler the Movie by Jim Shooter, Frank Springer, and Vince Coletta. We have Dreadstar by Jim Starlin, which is number 3. We have Conan the Barbarian, number 19, The Witch Queen of Acheron by Don Krahr, Gary Kwapitz, and Art Nichols. We have The Black Widow. It doesn't have the creative team on the cover, and I'm not going to pull it out of the magazine right now. And finally, Spider-Man Fear Itself. So, having said that, and I already have like three of them so far, I think it gets me really close to having a complete run because I think there are 26 issues or so. So that's what I got from Aaron Myers. And if you're interested about hearing Aaron Myers, you can find him in one of the Mike M's Collector's Corner. And he's a fascinating cat because he sells comics to buy comics. And he's one of those guys that on Twitter, if you follow him, he says, purchase this for a dollar. Purchase this for a dollar. So he makes a good profit off of everything he sells because he buys things in bulk and he finds really good deals in Portland. So that is what's happening in comic world. And then I want to talk about some of the stuff that I purchased from my comic shop. One of them, which I met one of my New Year's resolutions already for, and I didn't plan to go down the rabbit hole of Marvel graphic novel. It was an opportunity to do so and get a complete, near complete run. So I took it. And I've been a sucker for magazines, and that Punisher magazine kind of drew me in. So I have some questions that I asked. So I'll go into those. Shane from Australia says, "What do you think of the Future Quest title?" I own it, Shane, but I haven't read it. What is your favorite current DC title? And this one you might be surprised, but it's Nightwing, Taxicab driver Rick Grayson, and all those family of Nightwing characters. Are you reading all the Valiant titles? Yes, but I'm not caught up. I'm about, probably about 8 months behind. I was caught up before that with almost everything, except for Faith. But things have, my mood has switched and I'm going towards other things. Are you reading Black Hammer and Black Science? I have read a few issues of Black Hammer by Jeff Lemire and enjoyed it very much. And I have read a few issues of Black Science, and I've enjoyed that. So I keep buying them and just waiting for a mood to kick in, and I'll probably knock out a bunch of them. What books outside the big two would you recommend? I'm a horrible for these type of questions involving current stuff. What would I recommend from the big two? I'd recommend Nightwing for DC Comics, and for Marvel. You said outside the big two, but I want to talk about the big two. For Marvel, I'd recommend Immortal Hulk. And for other, trying to think of what is really, really good right now. I'll go Savage Dragon. I've always enjoyed Eric Larson's stuff. Spawn is pretty good, as far as like hero books. Man, I can't think of anyone's off the top of my head. I'd recommend the TKO books because I have read the first issues of those, but you can't get those through Diamond. So being in Australia, I don't. You'd have, probably have to pay an arm and a leg to get them to you. Man, I can't. I'm drawing a blank on any others, even though I've read a ton of them. A lot of which have been 5 out of 5s, but I'll have to come back to that once I jump into some stuff. Dudes on a Map says, now that Marvel has relaunched Conan, do you think it's a good idea to have three Conan titles at the same time? Jason Aaron title is bi-weekly. I didn't even actually know it was bi-weekly. Do you think it's oversaturation? No, because I think you gotta go with your gut and strike when everything's hot. And a lot of people are thinking Conan right now, and a lot of people will try a bunch of Conan, I think. So I think it's strike while the iron's hot. Kind of like everybody complains about Dynamite overexploiting Green Hornet, but I think they. Sh They struck when they needed to, and a lot of people tried multiple titles. Whereas if they trickled them out, I'm not so sure that they would jump from title to title because each Green Hornet was like in a different era. So, yeah, I'm all for it, but if I was limited to like certain funds and stuff, I would just get what I could. And then, you know what I would do? This is what I would do. If you are limited to certain funds, I'd get on that Marvel Unlimited, and I'd wait 6 months and read it all. Or if you want to be current on something, get like Conan the Barbarian proper, and then wait for the other stuff to come out. The only risk that you have there is I don't think Marvel is putting any Marvel Max on in the queue. And I hear that Savage Sword of Conan is going to be a little darker, which means it may not ever hit Marvel Unlimited. I'll be curious to see. Also, how do you feel about books being biweekly? I've been really enjoying it, to tell you the truth. A lot of them have been like Avengers and Uncanny X-Men. A lot of them have been coming out biweekly. And it's kept up the pace, so it's like I'm hungry for it, and it comes in, and then I only have to wait 2 weeks to read something. So I like it. I like the weekly comic too, like Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal, where some of the futures end. I'm all for weekly comics because it keeps me motivated to keep caught up for some reason. Nick says, after watching all the stop animation holiday specials, it's inspired you to ask, what comic character would be a perfect for a Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer style animation? It's like stop motion clay, or I don't know what it is. It's like they look like little puppets. I don't know how they did it. But Frosty the Snowman was like that, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Santa Claus, something or another. I can't remember the names. But he said his choices would be Plastic Man and Elongated Man, or Elongated Man, somebody that could stretch. I guess my choice would be Commandy. I think that world would adapt to a great stop animation type special. That's what I'd pick. Or OMAC. Commandy or OMAC, anything Kirby, but those two would be something that I'd really want to see. Drew says, Nick, by the way, is from Nerdy Legion podcast, and Drew is from Comics for Fun and Profit, so check those out. Drew says, we haven't had a Sergeant Rock title in a while. Why is that? Probably because the last one didn't sell very well. I haven't been able to go to the website and find out, man, it was like 2006 when it came out, how that did. But war comics don't tend to sell. I mean, you can go to like New 52 era and just check out Black Hawk and Men of War and see how they did. The only thing that you would have trouble with those books is comparing apples to apples, because those books were experimentations in war books outside of the World War II genre where most of the DC books came into. So they one of them actually featured Sergeant Rock's grandson, I believe. And it was involving like contemporary type war stories, and also where other countries had superpowered individuals. So if you're interested in that, check that out. Black Hawks was also contemporary type storytelling. It was happening as is, and they have appeared in various series like Batman, what was it called? Unleashed? It was the Snyder book that came out of Rebirth or New 52. So I don't think they've tried in a while, like going back to the time period where they, like World War II time frame. It would be interesting to see how it did. I'm gonna go look at Sergeant Rock as an example in the database and tell you the exact year that that came out. So Sergeant Rock came from our Army at War. It was continued from our Army at War 301. And that series ran from 1977 and 1988, so it was a pretty long going the series. The second series was called, it continued from Sergeant Rock Special from number 13. It went through 14 through 21 and two special editions. I think a lot of those were reprints. There might be some original material in there, but that was reprints. That's one that you're gonna see me trying to complete. I ordered a lot of these on mycomicshop.com. And then you had the one I was thinking of was Sergeant Rock Between Hell and a Hard Place. That was a book that came out by Brian Azzarello and Joe Kubert in 2003. We have Sergeant Rock's Combat Tales. This was a reprint that came out in 2005. We have a Sergeant Rock special, which we just talked about, that ran 13 issues. I think some of these were original material and some were reprints. And then you got Sergeant Rock's Prize Battle Tales. This was a one-shot and it was a reprint book. I don't own that one. I'd like to get it. Oh, by the way, what year was that? That was a 1964. And then this is the one that I was thinking of. From 2009, there was Sergeant Rock, The Lost Battalion by Billy Tucci. So I think that was the last series. Oh wait, there's Sergeant Rock Prophecy, which I also own. That one ca came out. That was by Joe Kubert with art by Joe Kubert, and that came out in 2006, and that was six issues. And that's it. So I didn't go over all the our armies at war, but there hasn't been like a lot long run since that Sergeant Rock special, if you want to consider. Like 2, 3 years. But he did have a long run in Our Army at War and Sergeant Rock proper. It'd be nice to have one. I just think they don't think it could generate sales. I don't know. I know a lot of people that want to see that, but I think they're the silent minority. I mean, not sorry, the vocal minority. I think the majority of silent people are not asking for a war comic. But who knows? They probably have like metrics and they're like, yeah, we got to pull this out to keep copyright and all that stuff. But they're probably shy about trying something so risky. The last time they've done that is for long running. It was Jonah Hex. They gave him quite the run in another non-superhero type based series. Kirk asks, who's a war comic lover, is there a creator you would follow on a character genre you normally don't buy? Like for me, I buy anything I can by Russ Heath, no matter what it is. I can only think of one that kind of gets me to buy anything. Like I think I've said on this podcast, I'm not a Transformers fan. I am not a GoBots fan. But I love Tom Scioli. I get commissions from him because he has like a Jack Kirby type style, and I do buy GoBots and I do buy Transformers from him, and I buy stuff that I no wouldn't normally buy because of him. So I'd have to go with that. I'm actually getting a Dungeons and Dragons, and I never get into fantasy stuff because I like Tess Fowler art. So there's right artists and writers I would follow on to two other books. More so writers than artists, particularly. Like anything Jeff Johns writes, I want it. I think he's an amazing writer. There's several writers that I like that I would follow and onto any genre because I just think they write good for me. So I hope that answers your question, and I'll be getting to Mike M's Weekly Reads in a bit. And thank you for listening. And I'm just going to go over 2 weeks worth this coming time. So I'll try to keep this show within an hour. Hello, and I'm back with Mike M's Weekly Reads. And let's get into the books that I read. I fell a little bit behind because I didn't go over the weekly reads in the last episode because I did the comic book page spotlight issue. But I did calculate everything. And it's interesting because we talked about the TKO stuff, and we're going to talk about the week of December 10th through December 16th. I can't even read my own writing. So that week we had a total of 27 comics read, 4 TKO, 6 Marvel, 16 DC, and 1 Antarctic Press. And I've been reading, I've been buying a lot of Antarctic Press, and haven't really been in that realm at all. And they seem to be getting into genres and properties that I'm a little more interested in. The TKO thing was kind of, I saw it available, and initially the TKO website said you could read each one free if you have the password. So, I saw the password that they gave and then went and read them all, and I enjoyed them all a lot. That's why I placed an order. And I'm not sure everybody got the same service that I did. Like I talked about their service, I was really pleased with, but I have a good friend that ordered before Christmas and he still hadn't received his. And he replied to my tweet, which I tagged TKO, and they made it good. They basically said, we're shipping it all, and he might be getting something extra. So that's a good deal. See, my tweets help. But I would have already said, cause I had good response from TKO. Of course, I didn't order it during the week that nobody was at work, which was Christmas week. I wait till I got back home. And I placed my order. It took a while to process, but I got an email saying, "Hey, we're processing your request." And then later on, I got an email saying, "We're shipping it." And then I got an email yesterday that said, "Hey, it's out for delivery." And then I got another email saying it was delivery. So whatever, however they did it, it worked well for me, and I had good response, and it was free shipping, I guess, because I ordered all four. But we'll talk about the TKO, and you'll find some interesting things, at least for me, because I love war comics and I love westerns, and I was a little surprised on which one I liked the least. But you got, please remember that I'm not driven by art as much as story. Like I said, I'm 70-30. Some people are the opposite. Like the art has to be there in order to sell the story. But let's talk about these. So we'll start with the 3 out of 5s. 3 out of 5 for me is I liked it. 4 out of 5 is I really liked it. And 5 out of 5 is I loved it. If I do give a 2, it means I did not like it. If I give it a 1, it means I hated it. So we'll start off at the 3 out of 5s. I read What If the X-Men number 1. This is the brand new ones that just came out a couple months ago. And this is the world where the X-Men are not mutants, but they're like executables. They call them execs because, you have a DOS program and it has a .exe. They're called execs, and they're in the cyber cloud. Professor Xavier asks the help of Domino and Cable to help rescue Magneto, who is trying to change the cyber world landscape. Magneto turns on them, and he is rescued by Professor X and has to go into Magneto's head to change things. It was an interesting story, but it wasn't that great. I enjoyed it. I was entertained. I thought the art was all right. I escaped. It was good enough for me to like it. We then get into the 4 out of 5. Starting at the bottom, it's Sarah number one, the Garth Ennis book. This is pretty much just setting the framework for this woman who is a female sniper, and she's in a Russian group that has a lot of females and males in the group to hold off the Nazi invasion in the wintertime. It was pretty interesting. The art was beautiful. The story is kind of just setting up the framework for this as she's protecting her people. The next book is my first Antarctic book that I've read. It's Star's End, and I like this one a lot because it read like a Star Trek thing. But it is a group of animal-like Star Trek trainees have to go to a planet of 3,000 creatures or slash workers that are infected humans. They're all infected. They are told their mission is there to get the valuable materials that are on that planet that they are mining and kill any survivors because they're infected and they don't want contamination. They find an unaffected human child and bring her to the ship. The Federation finds out and tells them to kill the officer that did that, in other words, that brought the child to the ship, and then kill the remainder of the people that are on the planet. A new captain on another starship is there and is told to meet up with the ship that was given the order to kill those people. So what's going to happen? But it read a lot like a Star Trek book, and I really enjoyed it. We then get into Hawkman 4 through 6. This is Hawkman going to Thanagar to meet Carter and warn the people about the Deathbringers. He needs to get an artifact there that will help stop the Deathbringers. He pretty much is on a mission on every world he goes to get these artifacts. They fight, but Carter actually gives Hawkman what he needs when he returns home. So he's fighting the Hawkman of Hawkworld, and for some reason, the Hawkworld Hawkman, because he's not only can regenerate through time, like being reincarnated, but he's reincarnated at space. And he can coexist in other space-time continuums, so it gets a little even more complicated. He hangs out with some friends back on Earth, and then a device he found sends him to another adventure in the microverse. And the friends that he's been staying with are kind of like people that his incarnation of Hawkman has saved throughout the generations. And he's got all of like these families that said, "Hey, you saved my grandfather, so our legacy will always be to protect you. So if you need a place to stay, you need food to eat, you could always come and be with me." And so he's in the microverse and teams up with his friend the Atom. And you got to remember that the Atom and Hawkman are really close friends, and they even shared a book. They had in the Silver Age, they had Hawkman and the Atom. And then they said, okay, our sales are, they're all right, but if we combine them, we will succeed. So they combined it in the Hawkman and the Atom. It didn't last very long, but it did exist. And they were in the Justice League satellite era together, so they have a really good history. He tells Adam he must find the next clue, and this time in the Microverse, that he left to stop the Deathbringers. He hid an nth metal on Mozga, which is a live planet in the microverse. He attacks it and angers Mozga, and Adam grows like to help defeat him, to help his buddy. On Mozga, Hawkman discovers one of his ships he put there back in one of his lifetimes. He boards it and is able to escape Mozga. He asks the Atom for help, But he says he can't leave the microverse because of its instability, and he's got his own things to worry about. He puts the new artifact on the ship and teleports him as he manages to stay one step ahead of the Deathbringers. So he's kind of like traveling, getting these artifacts that he needs to stop these people that are bringing the end of the world. We have Deathstroke 23 and 24. Deathstroke's instructing the team about swords. Rose stabs him, and he takes a while to heal. In other words, he thought he would heal right away. The next issue focuses on Kid Flash training to take out a sniper. The society appears, and this society really existed pre-New 52, but they have this society. Kid Flash thinks Power Girl is hot and trying to hit on her, and then the grocer's son wants to kill Willow. And I can't remember if at this time you learn. I don't think it. You know what who Willow's about, but she's after. She's this character that's out killing people, bad people, but you find out that she is really possessed. It's Ravager possessed by an older person and becomes this character called Willow. So that is Deathstroke. We then get into Plastic Man 4 through 6. This finished off the mini by Gail Simone. Plastic Man's stripper friends are getting attacked by the Secret Six: Antoinette, Ragdoll, and Catman. And I love the Secret Six. And he manages to save them. There is a group of villains coming for him. Plastic Man finds himself betrayed by the agent that he's been working with, a female agent. He turns over the child that he kind of met in issue one and is hanging out. He gives the child to social services because he thinks that's what's best for the child. The child escapes. He fights with a group against a group of villains: Killer Bee, Amazo, Dr. Psycho, Hugo Strange, and Per Degaton. He ends up defeating them by taking on Dr. Psycho. He is back at the stripper with his stripper friends, and the kid decides he is going to be a hero. Actually, Plastic Man decides he's going to be a hero, and this kid is going to kind of be a sidekick, even though I don't think he really has manifested any kind of power whatsoever. We then get into the Joe Kelly Monkey JLA, and this first issue is Joe Kelly and Doug Monkey's first take on the Justice League, and this run, which followed roughly the Morrison and Wade series, if I remember correctly, as they deal with Greek mythological characters caused by an infected abracadabra. The next three issues are Wonder Woman trying to protect a child that was taken away from his mom in a land called Junipur, where the child is destined to become the next Rama Khan. And that Rama Khan plays a character, maybe a generation of a Rama Khan, in the Age of Obsidian, which we'll be talking about in a few weeks. Wonder Woman just lost her mom recently, like in continuity. The one thing that was great about the Justice League at this time is it felt really connected to continuity. So if something was happening in their single issues, they made it a point to say, "Hey, this is where we are with this character." Just to let you know, and Wonder Woman's mom was lost recently. The League is torn between helping Wonder Woman retrieve this child for the mother or letting the culture's traditions pan out. So it's like one of those right wrong things that doesn't really have a clear-cut answer, and there really isn't an answer because and the other thing that's interesting in this is the lasso seems to break when she discovers the two conflicting truths. And reality kind of goes nuts. And that's because I think she put the rope around Rama Khan and learns that he's telling the truth about their traditions and stuff, and also the mom and all kinds of stuff. So it makes the lasso just freak out because you have two truths and you know which one's right. The Atom is trying to determine what the hell is happening. Wonder Woman's able to restore reality and her lasso and return the child to her mother, but the child will eventually have to become the next Rama Khan in this particular land. The next story, Plaz asks for help from Batman with his son. he has never even met that he had with Angel very early on. The kid is about 10 and joining a teenage gang because he has Plastic Man-like abilities. Kelly really moves forward with the Plaz character in this run, and it's really heartfelt. I mean, it's tearjerker because one thing that really grabbed me, it was Batman told Plaz, he goes, "You really shocked me that you want nothing to do with his kid. Because of all the people in the league, I thought you'd be the best father ever." And Plaz, like, kind of took that to heart, but he didn't show it right away. And he's like, "Okay, I'm going to move on with my life." And there's a scene where Plaz is, like, on the bat belt because Batman's consulting the child to, like, instill fear in the child and say, "You shouldn't join gangs and all this stuff because Plastic Man wants you, you know." Plastic Man can't even do that for his own son. He wants Batman to do it. And Batman does it. He kind of puts the fear in him and gets him to stop doing what he's doing and also take down the gang that's threatening this child. And Plaz was, as he was talking to the child, was, you know, fastened to the utility belt. So he was, like, forming the utility belt. And there is a panel in there that you see a tear come down Plaz's eyes. And this plays a bigger part right after Obsidian Age. And I'll talk about that very soon because it is very important in the characterization of Plaz, but it is an amazing issue. This series is amazing, and I am so glad I'm revisiting it. It's not the first time I read it. We got another 4 out of 5. I read Domino 2 through 6. Domino is terrified that this is the current Gail Simone Domino. She almost died because Topaz nullified her powers. She's attacked by an old man and Topaz on her birthday party. Spider-Man saves her from a fall off the building that would have killed her. So you're kind of questioning, is this Domino's luck power, or is it just coincidence that Spider-Man saved her? Because Topaz is kind of nullifying her powers. Cowgirl, her, and Diamondback take a job protecting a riverboat gambling owner. He can't pay her, so the team actually gets the boat as payment. She seeks help from Shang-Chi, the master of Kung Fu, for training, and he teaches her she can use her powers at will. It's not just, like, coincidentally being lucky. We find the prototype and Topaz were in the same mutant prison. A prototype is a character. He appears as an old man in this issue that's wheeled in a wheelchair by Topaz, but they're really the same age. It's just that Prototype seems to have aged faster because they were in the same mutant prison as Nina, which is Domino, growing up. They blame Domino for Desmond's suffering, so they want her to suffer. They have a run-in with Cowgirl and Diamondback, and Diamondback gets stabbed, and Cowgirl punches Desmond as he is teleporting and actually kills him. Shang-Chi's enemies attack while Nina and Shang-Chi are out dancing at a club. Nina takes them all out with her powers, and they leave out of fear, the rest of the people that were attacking Domino and the Master Kung Fu. Topaz attacks in Hong Kong. Nina has to knock out Shang-Chi to prevent her from killing. She thinks Topaz killed Diamondback. She actually does kill Topaz. We then get into a book from IDW, Punk's Not Dead. This is the Sid Vicious comic. A kid travels around to the talk show circuit with his mom. At an airport, he meets up a ghost of Sid Vicious. This kid is constantly picked on at his school and gets into a fight. He is getting beat up with a mystical force, hits the other kid, and puts him into the hospital. So this kid that has Sid Vicious actually got into a fisticuffs with another kid. He was getting his ass sort of kicked, but then it looked like he hit this kid in the groin, but he never moved a finger. So at the same time, That kid gets put into the hospital because of this. He keeps having dreams of one of the girls at his school that he's in love with, and she is experiencing the same dreams, so they're kind of like wet dreams. A paranormal investigator is trying to find Sid and the kid and solving paranormal events in London. She's really interesting. She was endowed by the Fountain of Youth and remained in her 20s until she was experienced a demon that kept her at the age of 65, so she was stuck in her 20s forever, and then she had this ordeal with this demon, and it aged her, and now she's forever at the age of 65. There are weird events around London where people are dancing themselves to death and cause the kid and the cause is the kid with Sid. Turns out the kid's mom had sex with this demon, not knowing he was a demon, which granted the kid magical abilities. His mom covers for them as they escape the paranormal agency, and there's going to be a second volume that's just been recently solicited in the previews. Goodnight Paradise. This is a 4 out of 5 from TKO, and it's a homeless man's son is coming to visit him and does not appear to know that he's homeless. It shows you really what's like to be kind of homeless. Like you feel like it's in his shoes. Homeless in Venice Beach. The man finds a homeless girl and her dog in a dumpster, and it then becomes a murder mystery. It is fascinating. One of his best friends is homeless too, but he lives in like an RV, and he gets gas and is able to move around. Really fascinating story that only Dysart can tell, because he is a social guy that likes to know where what people live, how they live, and try to help people. So if anybody could capture the essence of this scenario, it's Dysart. The next one that I raked a 4 out of 5 was a TKO book, The Fearsome Dr. Fang, where two detectives are after Dr. Fang. One brother discovers who the villain is and apparently dies. The one detective that is still alive becomes an alcoholic because he lost his brother. He meets a woman thief who is trying to steal a magic box and teams up with her to go after this mysterious Dr. Fang. Turns out Dr. Fang is not a villain, and that the three team up to fight a group of ninjas. One of the ninjas is supposedly the guy's dead brother. It's just pulpy goodness. Like, what I mean by pulpy, it's like a pulp cereal thing that you would see at the movies. It's just a lot of fun. And then we get into the 5 out of 5. There was one that week, the Seven Deadly Sins, number one. It's a Western where a baby is stolen by some Native Americans. They don't really delve into that first part of the story, but then a priest then goes to visit a prisoner that is going to be transported with six others to go to trial and be hung. He meets the six prisoners and they manage to escape their portable armored stagecoach. Stagecoach, and the priest comes with horses to rescue them. They are now the Seven Deadly Sins. I really enjoyed that book. We then get into the week of 1217, right before Christmas, to 1223, and it was a Marvel festival. Harley Quinn's playing with their toys. She wants to play. She's like, "Daddy, it's snowing outside. I can't run outside. You gotta play with me." But we had 32 comics, all Marvel that week. I had read the 3 out of 5s was the latest volume of Uncanny X-Men. The X-Men are going on a mission to fight Forearm, which was a Liefeld creation, and it turns out to be a group of mutants. Kitty Pryde and Angel go missing. Jamie Madrox is multiplying all over and saying, "Where is Kitty? Where is Kitty? Where is Kitty?" The group confronts Forearm, and the group defeats that evil group that was put together. Meanwhile, the X-Men kids are at the mansion, and Legion shows up, Professor Xavier's son. He is the one that infected Madrox. That'll come into play later, so I liked it, but man, when I started reading the next batch of Uncanny X-Men, it went higher than a 3 out of 5. But we'll talk about that in the future. Actually, in this episode, because I read it the same week. I've been reading X-Man, number 4, and in this particular issue, he fights with Apocalypse and meets his parents, which are Cyclops and Jean. It was an entertaining book, never read it before, and very entertaining around the time of Age of Apocalypse. I then started reading another book that I hadn't read, and that I read off of Marvel Unlimited. I don't own that one. Started reading another book called Gambit and the Externals, also a this is 1 and 2, and Gambit and crew are like Robin Hood characters in a post-apocalyptic world. The members are Jubilee, Guido, Lila Cheney, Gambit, and Sunspot. Richter is sent by Apocalypse to go after them. Lila gains powers to move through time and space, confronts the Starjammers, and they team up with them to grab the crystal they needed for Magneto to defeat Apocalypse. Really enjoyed it. It was fun. Venom 150 to 165. This I went on a Venom kick. I talked about this. This is prior to Donny Cates. Eddie is back with the symbiote. I actually was reading X-Men Blue, and we'll talk about that, but it led me into crossovers with Venom, which led me into saying, I want to finish this Mike DaCosta or Mike Costa Venom series. So I was reading forward, and then I had to go read backward just to make sure I finished reading all of the Venom's stories in this particular volume. And this is when the volume was running out, started out volume, number one, a new number one, and then moved forward into the legacy numbering. So we have Eddie back with the symbiote. Before it was like a Lee Price character. He takes on a company that released a chemical to turn people into dinosaurs. Yes, that sounds weird. And it's a Liz Allen's company. He is also working with some scientists to help fix his symbiote because it's acting really, really weird. There's one issue that is really cool, in which is this day in the life of a symbiote where Eddie is asleep. Like, what does the symbiote do when Eddie's asleep? There are cameos with Devil Dinosaur. This leads to Kraven hunting down the dinosaur people and Venom, but they defeat Kraven. There is an issue of Spider-Woman trying to hunt down Venom and then eventually letting him go. Lee Price, who had the previous costume in this run, gets out of prison and then steals Maniac, another symbiote, and then contemplates many villains or contaminates, contemplates. He contaminates many villains, including Black Cat. And goes into the Venomverse. So now we're in the Venomverse crossover. They use anti-venom to get control of the situation and take down Price. And it's in the Venom Inc. crossover. Then crosses over with X-Men Blue, where they fight Poison X, which are creatures that feed off of symbiotes. So it's a little weird relationship there. And Carnage is also freed in this process. And this also features a lot of Scorpion, and you got to remember that Mac also had the symbiote Venom suit at one point in time, and that included what I've just talked about: Venomverse 1 through 5, Amazing Spider-Man 792 through 793, Amazing Spider-Man Venom, Venom Inc. Or incorporated Alpha number one and Omega number one. So there was a lot of crossovers going on. And it also includes X-Men Blue 21 and 22, which was in that Poison X storyline, in which the X-Men team up with Venom to take on those Poison X creatures that are after the symbiotes. And they actually did take over Jean Grey in that time to become even more powerful. We then get into the same Uncanny X-Men run with the current run. Went to the top of the 4 out of 5s that week. 4 through 6. X-Men is now in the picture. It's kind of a really strange coincidence that I was reading back issues of X-Men. X-Man, sorry, the Nate Summers character, because it wasn't my intention, but it just coincidentally happened, and made me like the comic book a lot more. I think that's the reason I enjoyed it so much, is because I was reading some Age of Apocalypse, and now I'm in reading current Uncanny X-Men, and it's kind of showing this world. And X-Men eliminates religion, which is also fascinating because he thinks it's the root cause of all evil, why we have so many wars. And he's trying to make a perfect utopia. The young X-Men free Legion and recruit Madrox, which we learned about in those previous issues, to their cause. The X-Men confront chaos everywhere, and X-Men is changing things and bringing the dinosaurs back, even. The X-Men confront X-Man and his four horsemen, and his four horsemen of apocalypse are Blob, Omega Red, Magneto, and Angel. Angel confronts Psylocke and actually becomes Archangel again. It really picked up for me with the introduction of Legion and X-Man. Nate has Apocalypse all chained up in the background. So this is a series that I've been reading and really enjoying. So again, that was 32 issues that week. And next week we'll get into the rest of the Christmas week as well as New Year's week. So I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we will talk to you very, very soon. Again, you can reach me at any time and ask questions at Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch. That's at Mike. Myers Brunch. And you can go to Facebook under the Geek Brunch Podcast and click the like button and follow all the episode threads there. You could go to the website, Geek Brunch, where you can enjoy all of the podcasts, Geek Brunch Retro, Mike M's Collector's Corner, and this podcast, Mike M's Weekly Reads. I think that's all the information I need to give you. And if you want to send me email, send it to mike@comicbooknoise.com. I want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.